Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Welcome to the podcast, and welcome for the first time, David Cross. David?
Hello. Thank you for having me on your couch.
You know what I feel like? I feel like you're one of those smart comedians, and I'm one of those jack-off comedians.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right.
And I don't know how... I mean, I know how you got to be a smart comedian. I'm not sure how I earned the mantle of jack-off comedian, but...
What, you are, really? You have no idea.
Well, okay, I do a fair amount of jack-off humor, but I just mean... I think I'm funny.
Yeah, well, that doesn't preclude you from being funny.
Oh, it doesn't?
You know, usually... And I appreciate you thinking I'm smart. I don't think I'm as smart as you're giving me credit for, but... It doesn't usually. The smart stuff is not the funny stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
or seen that way.
Yeah. Well, but, yeah. I mean, maybe you're right.
Come on.
I mean, well, what movie? Like, give me an idea of some of the comedies that you've enjoyed over the years.
Oh man, like I'm a huge Animal House fan. I've probably seen that. I saw that when I was a kid. My mom had to take me because it was rated R. And
just watched the 2-hour documentary on the making of Animal House.
Really?
Finished
I didn't
it
know
last
that
night.
Existed.
It was just on, I don't know, Showtime or HBO or whatever, yeah. And it was, you know, Ivan Reitman and, you know, all the entire...
Like the anniversary?
Yeah, the 25th or whatever. Yeah. The entire cast, 30th anniversary. Entire cast, you know, minus Belushi, of course, just all the way through the making of the movie. And the beautiful thing about... Whether it's Animal House or The Godfather, the studio always drags their feet and doesn't want Brando to star in it, didn't want Belushi, and doesn't want this guy, and would rather have this guy play, you know, rather have Jim J. Bullock in the Belushi role. Like, you realize when you go back
and... Wait, is that for real?
I made that
up.
That was a smart joke.
Oh, man, would that be awesome.
No, I'm just saying... Every single movie, when they dissect it, you realize the studios are fuckers and they tried to ruin it.
Yeah.
And it was just Harold Ramis and Ivan Reitman and whoever else that actually pushed it through.
Yeah.
But they always had the wrong
instincts. That's a good example of a smart and dumb comedy, don't you think?
That movie, yes, that was a great balance of salt and sugar.
Yeah.
In the comedy department, because they'd have the fired the gun and the horse had a heart attack and the guy's getting a chainsaw out and he's going to dismantle or dismember the horse, and then just some great subtle jokes like I loved it when Belushi smashed the guitar and then just went sorry like it was a great super understated sorry. One of the great movie lines of all times, at least in my semi-racist mind, is when she said, "What's your major?" And the other one, "Primitive cultures." And then went right to Otis Day going to Papa Uma. And he's all sweaty and the lights are coming through his hair. Yeah. What are some of your favorite Animal House jokes?
I love the guy coming over, same scene, where he's like, "Excuse me. Does you mind if we dance with your dates?" And then
massive hand comes out.
Yeah, going, "No, not at all. It's great." And then, cutting to them, the girls walking back. And I don't know. I thought he was kind of ew. And then it's just jokes about dumb girls, you know. And
Otis, my man, was a good one. The look that Otis shot was a good one. I love just the inane John Belushi's bored at the end of the party. I'm going to dump this whole thing of mustard on my chest just for no good reason.
It's all good. I mean, the whole thing about super double secret probation and also the when Donald Sutherland, Peter Riegert realizes that Karen Allen is sleeping with the Donald Sutherland professor, and then he goes and he gets something from the top shelf and his sweater lifts and you see his naked ass.
She didn't, I don't want to step on the dock for you, but Karen Allen did not want to do the naked ass scene. Said, no naked ass. And so Sutherland said, I'll show my ass if you show your ass. And so Reitman directed it? Reitman produced it, and John Landis said, "Look, you know, if this guy'll show his ass, he's one of the greats. You got to show your ass." So she showed her ass. Yeah. But Sutherland had to show his ass before good she would show her ass. Yeah, good documentary. Yeah, great movie. Nice mixture of everything. And you realize when you watch the movie, and it's what I love about every great invention, every great movie, every great sitcom, every great design, when it's in the design phase, how they don't know what they have. Mm-hmm. So the executives are saying, this never going to work, and you got to recast. True. And they didn't, you know, the movie was, with Belushi and Sutherland aside, really, was all no names. So picture all
that was supposed to be Chevy Chase in the Otter role.
Yeah, think about that's the studio wanted to put a bunch of recognizable faces in there, and think how much it would have fucked it up for you if you were just watching a movie going, Steve Martin is Otter or Flounder or whatever the hell. Yeah, I love it. I loved it when Dorfman's picture came up on the slide and everyone started throwing beer at it. Or was that Flounder or whoever?
Flounder.
Whoever.
Yeah.
I just love the little beanie on the 10-gallon head.
And what was the one line that Doug Kenny had, one of the writers, where he's like, something, you more retarded moron?
Yeah. Who, by the way, if you watch the documentary, died...
Yeah.
In Hawaii.
Hawaii fell off a cliff. Yeah, I remember when that happened. It was because I was starting to... Animal House is sort of the beginning of defining comedy for me, you know, and realizing that, my thing is comedy. You know, it was sort of in that stage. I was probably 15 years old when it came out, 14, something like that. I know my mom had to take me to the theater because it was rated R. But
And you're back in what city?
This is Georgia, Roswell.
And your mom, dad together?
No. My dad split.
They divorced.
Yeah.
And your mom's doing what besides taking you to
We were super poor. We were really, really... my dad left us in debt, and we didn't have a car. We didn't have a TV. We were staying at this shitty apartment complex in Roswell, Georgia, just on the good graces of the guy not kicking us out. We had just been evicted... from the prior apartment complex, which was one of the most, as a kid, it'd be different, much different now, but as a kid was one of the most, like, traumatizing events because I got picked up at the bus stop. I just turned 10, and I got picked up at the bus stop by one of our neighbors, and he starts telling me, I'm like, that, you know, that's weird. Usually you just walk home from the bus stop. It's, you know, less than a mile. And
so you're coming home from school.
Coming home from school, yeah, elementary school. And he starts saying stuff like, he picks up me and my sisters, and he starts saying stuff like, I can't remember what he said, but it was all really odd. Like, it was, you know, vague kind of, so everything's going to be okay, you know. I mean, he's got less than... you know, 5 minutes to sort of break the ice with what's happening. And clearly my mom and dad sent him up to get us because they're dealing with this stuff. And so it was just odd.
So your mom and dad are together at this point.
At this point, yeah.
But still getting evicted.
Yeah. Well, my dad was kind of a, I hesitate to say con man because that connotes kind of a calculated.
Grifter? Oh, you mean...
But he's not. He was just a liar and a scammer. You know what I mean? It's different than having like an... You know, he didn't have a fake identity or these plans.
Sort of like guy who breaks open payphone and steals change is a thief, and so is an international jewel thief. But you wouldn't want to lump those two guys together,
right?
You don't want your dad was no international jewel thief.
He never had a real plan. We moved constantly when I was a little kid, and we were very poor, and we got kind of bumped from place to place. And a lot of this I didn't realize until I was in my late teens. My sister and I sort of pieced all the stuff together. And
so you come home, the neighbor drives you home to the apartment.
And the apartment, first of all, all the neighbors are gathered outside. And
the one good thing about poor people is they're home during the day, so they can gather. You know what I mean? Like when they arrest the 15-year-old black kid, and the mom comes running out beating the cops with the purse, and it's noon on Tuesday. It's like everyone's home. My mom was home too all day. So if shit happened, we could all gather. Yeah. I think there was a deal like, hey, why don't you get a job? Well, if we get a job, we might not be around if shit happens and we need to gather. What if a cop arrests my teenage son? Who's going to run out there and beat him with a slipper if I'm off at work? Use your head. So even though it's 2:30 in the afternoon and that it's a weekday, everyone is now congregated on the lawn of the apartment.
Very interesting observation, yeah. And, there was, as I said, we were in this shitty apartment complex, and so there were a lot of latchkey kids, you know, like
sure.
this up, and but everybody's out there, and they're taking stuff from the, I guess it was seized or whatever, and they were taking stuff and throwing it on, not violently throwing it, but really not
gingerly,
not
throwing
gingerly,
it.
Not
so they're getting the shit out of the apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that scene from Roger and Me, where they just where the big black guy goes up to the house and he tells him, you got to get a U-Haul and clear it out of here. By the way, could there be a worse gig? You know the people that do like...
Be like a repo guy?
Yeah, like repo. A repo, at least you're dealing with a pickup truck. Once in a while, you're dealing with the owner if he wakes up and sees you out there with the Slim Jim. But the guy, the eviction guy, you're dealing with human beings and they're kids.
Yeah.
And it might be raining outside. You're just dumping
them
outside.
That's your job. That's not just a once-a-month gig. That's what you do, you know, 5 days a week, 9 hours a day.
I would have to do, I'd do one day a year and then the other 364 in therapy.
Take a bath.
And then one day, I'd take a Silkwood shower. I'd take my, like, rape shower, then a Silkwood shower, then therapy. Then, that's what I tell my boss, then I would evict the family, and then back to the rape shower, and then back to the therapist.
But you'd be the best. You'd be the best.
Well, I'd be fresh and ready to go. So, you get evicted, and you're just bouncing around. You're poor, and your dad eventually just cuts out.
Yeah, the next apartment complex we went to, the thing that my dad had, which was inarguable, was he was very... charming, interesting. Yeah. He was from England,
oh,
so
really?
he would kick up his accent when he wanted to.
Right,
he was very outgoing, jokey, kind of very and not very smart, not like book smart at all.
No, but
the opposite of my mom, who was very intellectual and kind of mousy.
I grew up with a fair amount of these guys in the Valley, which is a lot of charisma. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of brains, not a lot of talent, certainly no drive. But real good bullshit artists.
Absolutely.
Oftentimes good looking or just had kind of it. And they all had this sort of Peter Pan syndrome.
Absolutely my dad.
With the ladies. Like when you'd go like, God, why is that hot chick with that fucking loser? Because that loser's Peter Pan and he's figured out a way to talk her out of her
panties. That was my dad. I didn't, you know, come to... the truth about my dad, partly because I was ignorant to it and partly because I sort of kept myself from it until I was 18 years old. And I still had kind of a worshiping, you know, a thing towards him. And I went to live with him in Phoenix, Arizona when I was in, I guess I was about 15. And you know, we lived in this motel room, this shitty, awful place that I realized we were getting, you know, we were sleeping in the same bed, and he had no money. He had no job because he'd either get fired or he did this a lot. Like, all through, since I've, you know, knowing him, the kind of proud, indignant, like, I'm not going to work for a guy who expects me to do this. I'm not going to do that, you know, that kind of shit. So then we'd have no job. He'd have no job, and we'd have no money and no food. We literally ate vending machine candy because he knew a vending machine supplier for a while. Seriously.
Jesus.
And it was nuts. And we were sleeping in the same shitty little motel, you know.
And today, do you see him? Do you have a relationship with him?
No, there was a specific incident that made me say, I'm never talking to you again. And that was when I was 19. And he lives in New York.
Mm-hmm. You live in New York.
I live in New York. He lives in New York. I've never seen him. My sister has off and on been in touch with him and always has great, great stories. She knows what a douche he is.
Now, but he's also an opportunist.
Yes.
And he sees you on TV now. And, you know, it's like I always say about my family, which is look, you don't save any money for college. You don't go to any Pop Warner football games. You're not very generally supportive. You don't do too much for your kids. You roll the dice, and most of the time, it absolutely works out, except for once in a while, your kid gets a fucking morning show and calls his dad a pussy on it every morning, and then you fuck up. But it was a good plan. You did save. One out of 100 times it doesn't work. But the other 99 times, you just don't have to pay for college or go to any shitty Little League games, and it works.
Adam, I've always said about that, because people, you know, who aren't in the situation tend to have the kind of, like, you know, touchy-feely, hippie-ish, like, oh, you can't just bury the hatchet, or, you know, and it's like, look, this is the
family,
one thing.
It's family. It always
is. And it's not even about vengeance or revenge or anything, but the one thing I get to do for he was a terrible father, you know, completely absent, you know, had all these affairs and just a really self-absorbed, selfish
right.
guy with kids who brought kids up and thought, I imagine, was like, you know what might be interesting is having kids. I wonder what that's like. And then after a few years,
first thought was, you know what might be interesting? Not pulling out.
Yeah.
That's probably the genesis of it. And then later it turned into, I wonder if we had kids.
But you know, it's like, so he does all that. The one thing, the only thing in my power to do to let him know that that's not cool is to completely disassociate myself with him. And it's like, no, you don't get to have me as a friend. You don't get to...
Does he try? Has he tried?
Not really, but through my sister, he's made kind of noises about... like knowing that we're both in the same city, and he's completely turned it into something else in his own head.
It's funny when guys like that have a lot of pride, because it's like the guy who eats out of a vending machine, can't hold a job down for more than 10 minutes, and can't afford an air mattress for his kid to flop on in a motel has that kind of pride.
Yeah, absolutely.
It always makes me laugh when a guy's like, I'm too proud to do it. Really? Too proud? You're driving a piece of shit? You have four warrants out for your arrest. Haven't held a job for more than 10 minutes. You have pride.
So I came out to Phoenix with, I had a guitar and I had some stuff. I had some stuff from my, that I had gotten from my bar mitzvah, like this jade Star of David necklace on a gold chain, just shit like that. And
nothing screams rocker. Louder, by the way, than the guitar and the Star of David gold necklace.
And a big Jufro and dorky glasses with tape around them. But so anyway, I brought this stuff out there, assuming, the assumption is, you know, I'm going to live with my dad and everything. And it was really hard leaving my sisters and my mom and stuff in Georgia. And
well, why did you? And why did your mom not go, hey, man?
Because I was 15, and you can't tell a 15-year-old.
You think you're striking out on your own.
Who's got a dad thing. And I hated Georgia. Hated. I lived in the sticks and in Roswell, which is now kind of connected to Atlanta. It's all one big, you know, massive sprawling thing like L.A. But back then, when I was growing up, it was the woods and the creek, and, you know, it wasn't, you know, there were people who grew up there who never went into the city. Ever.
Right.
You know, and I hated it, especially as I got older and just, you know, wanted some culture. And so, I mean, there's all these crazy stories of my dad. But anyway, I get there. He's just not ready or willing in any way to have a kid there, even though he told me to come out. It's great, you know, and he has no job. And it describes, and the only reason we were staying in that motel place was because he was fucking the landlord's wife, which I found out, who was this boozy, nasty, alcoholic, bottle blonde, nasty woman. And I found that out later,
weird.
Of course. So then he's got no... He's got no. He's run out of money. He's run out of favors.
Right.
We were staying in somebody's house at one point. You know, just friends of friends, and they don't know who I am. That wasn't part of the bargain. And you know, he's just run out of options and people to rip off. So, I remember him sitting. We were at a bar, and he was at this bar, and it's like noon, and he just gave me like $5 and quarters. Go play the pinball machine while he. You know, looks for a job deep within the bottom of his beer.
Right.
And And so he's like, all right, well, let's go back. You really miss your mom and your sisters. I can tell. This has really bummed me out. I don't want to keep you here. This whole thing. And he made me believe it. Like, right. Oh, you're right. I do want to go back home.
Right.
Because he had no options. And so we get one of those driveway cars. We leave under the cover of, you know, making sure nobody's there because he owes all this money and rent.
Right.
Go to a pawn shop, pawns all my stuff.
Pawns Star
all my
David?
Stuff. Yeah, everything. Pawns my stuff so we can
Even
have
the
money.
The Jufro?
Yeah. Look at me. See this?
That's true. He
Look
took at me. The fro. That was your source of power.
And,
he pawned your bar mitzvah shit.
And no, and I'm not joking. I'm not exaggerating. We arrived back in Roswell with a nickel.
Really?
We had a nickel and, you know, a quarter of a tank of gas left.
And he dumped you off or moved back in?
He moved back in. My mom was really bummed out, but she was so happy to have me back because I didn't tell her I was coming back. I knocked on the door and she opened it. I was like, hey, I forgot my sweater. And she freaked out.
Right.
That was my big joke.
Right.
And my dad crashed there. And then eventually I gave my dad, because I was so psyched to have my dad back in Atlanta. He moved into the city in an apartment. I gave him, he told me not to tell anybody, gave him all my bar mitzvah money that I had in a savings account.
Hold on.
Gave it to him so that he could get put a deposit on
it. Please don't tell me that motherfucker hawked your high. I don't know why. I just want to say hawk and high. Together.
We gotta say the high.
Hawked your high. Well, I had no idea about you and your past, and first off, it's refreshing to hear a Jew that is grew up with a ne'er-do-well dad who was that poor, number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And number two, it's one thing I love about this business is you talk to people whose dads were investment bankers and dentists and lawyers, and you talk to people whose dads ran whorehouses and were junkies, and yet they all seem to be in the same business. The trash man doesn't work that way.
Right.
It's not like, well, my dad had a big law firm or my dad was a broker on Wall Street and I'm a trash man. It was
right.
Like my dad was a trash man and I'm a trash man. Comedy is one of the weird businesses where everyone's dad either did nothing or something, or rich or poor or educated. I mean, I've talked to some guys whose dads were some of the most highly educated, richest guys in the world, and they got into comedy. And I've talked to comedians whose dads were complete and utter fucking bums, and they got into comedy. I'm trying to think of another profession, maybe air traffic controller, that will just draw from every pool.
Well, you know, part of that is, comedy is an adjunct of, you know, arts and expression, and, you know, people who've gone through I don't know what it's like to be mega rich, but I'm not ignorant enough to think that, oh, they don't have any problems. Of course they have
problems. No, I've seen enough 80s movies to know where the rich roommate brings the poor roommate home for the holiday to realize how much they hate each other. Because they sit at the end of each table.
Right, right.
And at some point,
and
they dress for dinner. And at a certain point, the guy leans over and says, I think you've had enough, when she's pouring the wine. And she says, I'll tell you when I've had enough. And you can tell rich people are miserable too. Sorry,
Thank
Weezer.
God for the arts.
Do we have, for the arts, do we have some Skype calls you want to try?
Yeah, the first one we got is Adam from Seattle. And he's got a call for David.
Adam,
you there?
How's it going?
Good. What's up?
Good. Got a question for David. I was asking about the Arrested Development movie. I'm a huge fan of the show. Thought it was the funniest show on TV, and hoping we could see Tobias on the big screen.
Oh, yeah. I get asked that question every day, and I'll tell you what I know, which is it's definitely further than it was a couple months ago, but all I know is that everyone's on board. Everybody wants it to happen, and there was some deal that was made with the producers and the writer, but it's also one of those things, I'll believe it when I'm actually on the set, you know, because I've heard so much. It's gone back and forth, and, you know, hopefully it will happen, and it's definitely in a better place than it was a while ago, but that's still not, definite.
Do we have another phone call over there, Weezer?
Yeah, we do. The next one is Brandon from Germany, and this one's for you, Adam.
Brandon?
Are you there, Brandon?
What's going on, Brandon?
Hey, just calling from Stuttgart, Germany.
Yeah, you guys make a nice car. What's up?
Yeah, hey, I had a question for you. So I've been out here for the last month. I have a nice little 3-series rental, and I've just found that driving out here is a pleasure on the Autobahns. Now, I was wondering if you've driven out here at all, and what we need to do in L.A. to start driving like this.
Wow. Okay. L.A., I was breaking down L.A. just yesterday and why we're so fucking slow in L.A. We have a couple of situations here in L.A. A lot of cultures whose previous form of transportation was either a moped or a donkey, so they don't go back. See, Germans go back deep with cars. Whereas a lot of folks in L.A. don't go too deep with cars. It's the reason they always cite this reason as why we're bad at soccer. Because they go, well, your parents didn't play soccer, and their grandparents didn't play soccer, and these other cultures, they played soccer for generations, and thus the kids are good soccer players. L.A. has a lot of people that parents did not drive, so they're like first-generation drivers.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Or if they did, they drove something with three wheels that was a two-stroke. So we have that. We also have the main problem. Well, not the main problem. It's a combination of this. Super overzealous cops. And I'll tell you why. We go, well, why are you blaming the cops? I'll tell you why. Go to New York. See how the cab drivers drive in New York. Here's people who make their living with their driver's license, meaning your cab driver, you get a couple of speeding tickets, you get your license pulled. You're out of work. I mean, you're not putting food on the table. You go to New York, cab drivers drive like fucking maniacs, which I love. Don't get me wrong.
It's a functional, understood anarchy that
everyone's
not obeying the rules.
It's understood.
Yeah.
And they drive hard, and they drive fast, and they get you where you need to go.
And there aren't that many accidents.
Now, obviously, if they had the same cops that Santa Monica, Glendale, or Burbank had, well, then they would slow the fuck down almost immediately because they couldn't afford it. Now, you get into a cab in L.A. and see how they drag their ass. The reason they drag their ass driving in L.A., what's the difference? They're both driving Crown Vicks. It's the same car. They're both a crazy nationality. It's not the crazy nationality. It's the cops. We, our cab drivers, are scared shitless that the overzealous LAPD is going to write them a chicken shit ticket. Whereas in New York, it's a symbiotic kind of understood, okay, listen, you do what you need to do.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll look out for bad guys and keep the road cleared for you. L.A. doesn't do that. L.A. rapes their citizens on the fucking road every fucking day. That's what they do. They get you for chicken shit no front license plate things. They get you for chicken shit window tint things. They get you for chicken shit everything. So if you have this group of, 10 million cars who are essentially sheep, and then a whole shitload of wolves that are circling around picking them off all the time, then you have to drive scared. And when you drive scared, you drive slow. Plus, L.A. has tons of undocumented people from all over the world that don't have fucking car insurance, and if they get popped, they're screwed. I mean, these are people that make minimum wage that don't have proof of insurance, and if they get pulled over, they're totally fucked.
But don't you think the presence of the cops and the prevalence for tickets and stuff is just revenue? It's revenue and revenue and revenue.
Of course.
That's
they're
it,
just
right?
raping taxpayers. Yeah, of course.
Revenue,
that's,
putting money
that's what
in.
They do, except for they slow everyone down because everyone's scared shitless of them. Then when they pull them over by the side of the fucking road and everyone rubbernecks like you've never seen a guy get a fucking ticket before. And oftentimes they block the lane they pull them over on.
Oftentimes,
so Highland goes from two lanes.
Single,
what's that, Weezer?
Every single time they park like in the lane.
Yeah, they park in the lane. When I was getting my ticket for no front license plate on Highland, we shut off one of the lanes while everyone drove by and went, hey, Mancho's getting a ticket. Kimmel's lost weight. That's all I heard as they drove past. So that's part of the reason. The other part is not a fast-driving culture. The other part is totally uneducated. They don't know you can turn right on a red. The other part of the culture is just a slow-moving, ass-dragging general. I'm halfway blame the Mexicans for this. They got a kind of low, laid-back. Look at the fucking cars. They're dragging on the ground. The whole point is, like, slow down, take it easy. This is L.A. And by the way, every sign you see just says click it or ticket or slow down. nothing ever says, hey, get going. We don't even honk our horns in this fucking city. We're scared shitless to honk our horns. You, in New York, if the signal changes for one fucking hummingbird's heartbeat and you don't hit it, the horn's on immediately. Nobody honks in L.A.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Cops are overzealous.
You don't want that.
We're driving ourselves into the ground, literally. And the left lane's not a passing lane, just another slow lane. I listen, I'm not crazy about the Germans, but I'll tell you, the one thing they do got going is that Autobahn in that car.
You're
sorry.
Very passionate about this.
I'm passionate. The reason I'm passionate about it is because this is a massive problem. I mean, like, let's move traffic out of the equation. Let's not call it traffic. Let's just say we have a massive problem in L.A. We have a massive problem that cost us millions of dollars. And by the way, we think we're green over here. Do you know how many barrels of oil your car goes through sitting in traffic all fucking day just idling?
Yeah.
It's massive. We have a massive problem here, a massive problem. And our way to address this massive problem is to, A, unleash more cops on the crowd and pull over more people and give them more chicken shit tickets, put up more signals and more intersections to freak more people out when they're driving through them, and to, say, get every highway sign, every electronic billboard sign up there, and all it says is click it or ticket. All we're fascinated in, all we want you to do is put your seatbelt on. We don't give a fuck about how fast you drive. The point is everyone from L.A. is from somewhere else where it was illegal to turn right on a red. You know, New York, you can't turn right on a red, at least in the city.
That's the only place, though, that I know of.
There are other places around the country, possibly the world, where you can't turn right on a red. Okay, well, New York has L.A. has a lot of New Yorkers. Those New Yorkers are not aware that
I'm
it's...
going to break down your theory piece by piece,
you can try, but it's not going to work. Because go out and test it. See how many people are turning right when the signal's red. They don't know it's legal. I don't blame them. We've not made them aware of it. We have made them aware of the click it or ticket campaign or the end senior or elder abuse or whatever, you know, whatever. There's no excuse for domestic violence or whatever the fucking campaign we have. But we don't have anything to tell you to turn right when it's red. We have Villaraigosa, who's one of the worst mayors in history running this country. He's a sociopath. He's semi-retarded. He's a midget. And obviously he's not addressed this issue at all. He's too busy failing the bar or fucking chicks from Telemundo to address the problem of traffic. So that's our problem.
That's pretty good for a midget.
Next question. I know. Well, maybe he failed the bar because he couldn't reach the desk. Do we have... he failed the bar four times, everybody. Four fucking times.
I can't believe you're
times.
Allowed to take the test a fifth time. You know? That's pretty...
I know.
At some point, you're like,
they just
sorry,
laugh you out of it?
You really should try another... line of
the
work.
Third time you attempt to take the bar, shouldn't somebody in some sort of ceremony, humiliating ceremony, take your number two pencil and snap it in front of you and then hand it back to you in two pieces, like, and then you take the long walk of shame?
Yeah, give you a job application for the DMV or something.
Right. All right. Do we have another call, by the way, Donald?
Yes. This one is for David, and it's Nat. Nat, you there?
Nat, you there? Yep.
What's happening, Nat?
What's happening? Hey, Adam. Hey, David.
Hello.
I was going to ask about if David knew about what Artie Lang was saying, but I don't want to stir up any shit.
I'll put you on hold because your thing's bad. Artie Lang was on the show a couple of weeks ago talking shit about you. Although, to be fair, he didn't base it on anything. I'll let you watch it, and you can tell me what you think. And again, it sounds horrible, but then
those kind of guys hate me.
Well,
because I represent it's like what you were saying before, although this wasn't your attitude, but the idea like, "Oh, you think you're so smart," and I think the assumption is that I don't like them. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
That's usually it.
Yeah, yeah.
But let me take
it.
A look.
All right. Donnie'll play it for you, I think.
Like, I hate David Cross. He's a huge asshole.
There you go.
And One time he came on the show, and like Howard was just tired, and everything he said, Howard was just like, "What else, Rob?" And I moved my mic away, not to even help the little fuck, and he just bombed miserably, and it was great.
I love that. What else? Yeah, and what? And by the way, what's the beef with Cross?
He was he's smarter than everybody. You know, he went to Emerson, and he's one of these jerk off alternative comics who thinks he's smarter than everybody.
I told
David
you.
Cross was a writer. for the pilot of Mad TV. Mm-hmm. Now, I was 27 years old. Oh, I came out here, and my manager said to me, hey, you don't know anybody out there. Maybe you want to meet some buddies or some friends in comedy. He said, so David's a writer. Go up to him and say, you know, I know him. Hey, how you doing? And maybe you got, you know, it's a friend you can make, right. You know. So I'm sure Cross was mad he had to make money writing for the pilot of Mad TV because I'm sure that was beneath him, right. You know, on some level.
Sure.
So I go up to David Cross. So he probably wasn't happy with his life being there, and I guess he was trying to do Mr. Show, you know. And everybody was really nice, so I go up to him after one of the network read-throughs, and I say, David, the manager's name was Ken Trusch. Mm-hmm. I said, hey, David, my name's Artie Lang, and Ken Trusch told me to say hi to you. How you doing? And he looked at me and said, yeah, yeah, whatever, man. And he just walked away. Mm-hmm. Now, that's all he's ever done to me. He acted like an asshole, like an arrogant prick. Like, he's like, you're a cast member. I should be a cast member. I should be writing a show. Like, this is all stuff. He never told me this. I'm projecting it on him because I'm a crazy guinea from Jersey.
Right, that's it.
But he gave me what we call a high hat.
Sure.
You know, like, you know, an arrogant sort of like, you know, fuck off. That's the look he gave me.
Right.
And that's the only thing he ever did to disparage me. But since then, I hate him.
Well, so like I said, he didn't base it on much. Yeah. But you did. He gave him the high yarmulke, and he got pissed off about it. I don't think he knows about your roots. I think he assumes that, you know, you smart college boys must have grown up with a silver spoon in your mouth or something.
You know, I dropped out of college immediately. I went up there and I ran out of money. I didn't have any money, and that's another thing. I never graduated.
So you never really went to Emerson?
I didn't spend a year there. I actually was hanging out with, you know, my girlfriend was going to Emerson and various friends who eventually were on Mr. Show. But, you know, so I made a lot of friends through that and hung out and kept living in Boston. But, yeah, I dropped out of school. I couldn't stay, and I would have failed anyway. But
bad news is Lang called you an asshole, but the good news is it wasn't based on anything.
He readily admitted that. That's fine. I mean, as I said before he showed that clip, you know, I mean, those kind of guys, it's not good to lump everybody into one thing, but there's that assumption. Like he just said, like, oh, he thinks he's smarter than everybody else, and he's this bullshit alternative comedy. And, you know, I'm not that familiar with Artie Lang's stand-up, but, you know, I've got, on record, I've got, I don't know, like 5.5 hours of stand-up, and it's not, I'd say, you know, 30% of it, it could be lumped in as alternative, and the rest of it is fucking jokes.
I've seen a lot of it, yeah. It's not Kelsey Grammer up there, reading Shakespeare.
It's just, it's kind of a bullshit thing to, but I will say this, because I certainly remember.
Do you remember going on Stern and getting the, what's next, Robin?
That, it was brutal. It was.
Well.
But they also didn't, they weren't, it was very strange because, and not as an excuse, but just the context of the situation was, and this happened a couple times at different things where I was under the impression that I was supposed to talk about a specific thing, mm-hmm. and that was not what was going to happen at all. And this all happened with the release of the first CD I did. And this happened on NPR. I did NPR, which is the, you know, ideological opposite. And same thing happened where I was, like, prepared for this one thing, and then they were just talking about this other thing. I was like, oh, wow, I got the wrong info.
They just want to talk about what an asshole Artie Lang was the whole time?
No, they were it was something about Joan Rivers. They were making a lot of Joan Rivers and Melissa Rivers jokes, and I think I was supposed to
jump in,
and I was totally – I thought it was something – I was there for a different reason, and it was while they were reading the news, and nobody was really nice to me.
We're talking about Stern now.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
nobody, I mean, I was in the waiting room, and then they go, okay, come on in. They just threw the headphones on. And
well, the thing about Stern, first off, you never know what surprise they have waiting for you. Like, I've done Stern 1,000 times, and, you know, Gary will call you the day before, and he'll go, you know, and I said to him, what's going on? Who's on the show today? Because it varies wildly, you know. Mm-hmm. And he said, Stephen Baldwin's going to be on the show today. And I said, oh, what time's Stephen coming in? And he said, 7 o'clock. And I said, well, how about you have me in at 8 o'clock? Because that guy's a holy rolling, energy drinking, Bible thumping, blowhard. I mean, he's like all the fucking wind that the Baldwins, that Alec Baldwin has, and none of the brains. Just a fucking huge fucking sack. No. And then he became a born again, and now look at. And, you know, he's like, he's a fun guy. He'd be a fun guy to go, like, play softball with or go rappelling down a mountain with or something like that. But I didn't want to sit up there and compete with his religious rhetoric. So I told Gary, that guy's a sack of born again. He's a born again blowhard. Have him at 7. I'll come in at 8. So he said, all right, fine. So I come in there at 8. I sit down. Put the headphones on. It's like, how was Steven? I didn't hear. Oh, why don't you ask him yourself? Here he is. Then, of course, he comes and sits down right next to me, they puts the headphones on, and then they go, so, Gary, you talked to Adam yesterday? Yeah, I did, Howard. Nice. What did he say about Steven? He said he was a sack of wind, and he didn't want to sit next to him, and blah, 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 blah. Is that true, Adam? Did you say that about Steven? Yeah, kind of, maybe. I mean... I didn't say it exactly that way. So, I mean, that's what they do to you on that show. That is that show. But sometimes when you do the news, Howard wants to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
And then sometimes when you do the news, he wants to hang out. And so when he wants to get the fuck out of there, Robin will be like, in Hounslow, England, a dwarf clown was arrested for butt-fucking a pregnant cat. And Howard will go, what's next? And I'll go, what? You don't want to get into that for a second? What's next, Robin? And that just means he wants to he wants to move it along. He wants to get out of there. And if he's in the what's next mode.
Yeah, it was definitely like that. And it was strange. And it was one of those things like it was over in 5 minutes. And then like, all right, thanks for coming. Like, wow, that was weird and not good. And but, you know, and it wasn't again, I would have hoped that I would have been able to, you know, assess the situation and make the right adjustment, but I just was way off my game, and nobody was really friendly. There was nobody said hi or anything like that. It was just like, sit down, put your things on, and that was it.
Robin is sitting in an aquarium with headphones on, and she's reading a newspaper, and Howard's eating.
They were all doing that. That is exactly what happened. I think Howard literally had some food and already sitting over there, and he's bored to tears. And, you know, that's exactly, I think he was eating, too.
Yeah, and it's always funny because you're sitting there during a commercial, and, like, Gary come in and be like, Howard Hessman wants to come in next week. Tell him no, he's not going to do it. Where's my egg salad? And you're just sort of sitting there while this is all going on around you. Do we have another Skype call, Donnie?
Yes, we do. We got John from Canada. It's a question for David. Are you there, John?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's happening, John?
Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
Not much. I'm a really big fan, first of all. I really love the show.
Thanks.
I had a question for David Cross, actually.
Here he is.
David Cross, also a huge fan as well, by the way. I love your work.
Thanks.
I've read a bit on the internet and elsewhere that that Run, Ronnie, Run, you're really unhappy with the way it turned out. I thought the movie was really funny, you know. I mean, I love Mr. Show, and I thought the movie was pretty good, too. I was just wondering if you could sort of talk about what went wrong, in your opinion, and some of the production difficulties.
Sure. I don't think it's a terrible movie. I think it has its moments, and those moments are pretty funny, but...
I haven't seen it, so tell me about it.
The biggest fault of the movie was that the director tried to... really calculatedly tried to make it into one of those kind of like Joe Dirt, that kind of genre of like a comedy that was kind of broad, where he, I think, put way too much emphasis on telling the story. And Bob Odenkirk and I were more of the, like, let's just put the funniest stuff in there. Mm-hmm. People want to laugh, you know, they don't
this
need...
This is Run, Ronnie, Run.
Yeah, based on some characters we did on Mr. Show.
Right.
And, you know, there were a lot of different problems that, you know, created this ultimate end result that we didn't care for. One was, you know, our script kept changing. We get notes from New Line, the studio, and whereas initially our first script was like kind of used Ronnie Dobbs as a thread where we jump off into these other sketches, which was closer to the show.
Right.
all those in by the second, third, fourth incarnation of the script got taken away. There were a couple moments of there. There's the thing Jack Black thing where he's like a chimney sweep. They're showing a clip mm-hmm. from Mary Poppins, and it's a song called "Kicker in the Cunt," and and like these various three times one minus one, and there are elements of it, but 50% of that movie was those kind of things, and they were all taken away. Which is all the theory was. Well, we got to tell a story. People are gonna get confused. They don't know how to watch comedies, and they don't know what they're gonna laugh at unless they have a story. And you know, and it was, you know, I think a big mistake.
I had a sorry for butting in, as it pertains to story, I've told this story on the air. You know, I just did a sitcom for CBS. And I had a minor meltdown on the set, not while we were filming, but while we were getting our 1,400th batch of notes about moving the A story and losing some of the momentum of the B story and not finding the C story arc. I had one of my, you've not experienced them, but I'm soft-spoken, but once in a while I have a meltdown. And once I have a meltdown,
I believe it.
It's Christian Bale-esque. And I just started screaming at everyone at the set, would somebody use the fucking word funny? Could I hear the word funny? I've heard story 250 mm-hmm. times. I've heard losing story momentum. Mm-hmm. I've heard losing arc. I've heard about the C story. I don't even know what the fucking C story is. I didn't know you had to have a C story. Did fucking All in the Family have a C story? Yeah. I don't think they had a C story unless Edith was a C. But I don't think there is a fucking C story. I never watched All in the Family and went, hey, man, this is losing some B story momentum. I just went, he called fucking that guy Meathead again, and I'm laughing. Mm-hmm. And he called her a dingbat, and I'm laughing. Could somebody at least start saying the word funny?
Yeah.
I have not heard. I hear the situation. I'm not. There's no comedy left in the situation. And the executives just give you notes. And their notes, the executives who don't have a sense of humor and who aren't funny and don't claim to be funny can't comment on funny. But one thing they can comment on is story. So you just hear story, story, story. And every note you get is story. And they carve out a little funny and they add in a little story. And before you know it, a lot of the comedy's been carved out, and in its place
is
a lot of story. And now what you have is a sitcom and or a comedy movie where the story is crystal clear. It's just not that funny.
Right. What's the perhaps, you know, arguably the funniest film of all time, Holy Grail, right?
Yes.
Arguably, there's, you know, that's just cramming a ton of jokes in there.
It's a whole bunch of, like, vignettes just shoved
together. And it's 25 years old or whatever, 30 years old, and it's still one of the funniest movies ever made. And, that was our argument.
One of the movies I enjoyed the most, mainly because of the titties, but because of the funny, too, was Kentucky Fried Movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just 4-minute vignette smashed up against 4-minute vignette.
You didn't need a story to go to to get you in the seat in the theater and just have a good laugh and...
No,
you know, it's a philosophy that I don't, you know, as you said, it separates the studio guys and the directors from the writers and performers and comedy nerds.
Yeah,
and
now
we lost that argument. Bob and I lost that argument in a big, major way, and I think, hindsight's 20/20, of course, but I believe that if we were allowed to be in the editing room and to, you know, show the movie, just pull from the footage that we had shot and create the movie we wanted to, it would have been way more successful. It would still be talked about. There was so much funny stuff that didn't get in there, and you know, it was a shame.
What was the budget of the movie?
$9.
Wow.
Yeah. $9 American dollars.
Oh, American.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, this is back in the late 90s when that was worth
$15. Yeah. Do we have another call, by the way, Donnie?
Yes, we do. This one's for you, Adam. It's Haley from New Hampshire.
Haley.
Are you there, Haley? Haley?
Yeah.
Yeah, New Hampshire.
Crystal clear.
Yeah, what's going on?
Oh, good. That's like the first one.
What's happening, Haley?
Not much. I first want to say I love you, Adam. I've been listening to you since Loveline, and then I stopped listening because Stryker kind of sucks.
Yeah, that's a guy who replaced me, but go ahead.
But I know you watch a lot of documentaries, and I've recently been on a documentary kick, and I wanted to know which ones you would recommend.
Good question.
It is a good one. Well, I like I said, I just saw the one on the making of Animal House, which is running on cable, and it's about 2 hours long, and that was really informative and really interesting, especially if you like Animal House, but it was just a good doc. Anyway, there was a really cool documentary that I saw about a year ago, I believe, called Bigger, Stronger, Faster, America. It was a guy, documentary filmmaker. Oh, he'll kill me, but his name was Chris something. You can try to Google
Chris,
that, Donnie.
Chris, the guy did American Life?
No.
American Movie?
Different guy. Let's see. Who? You got to blow it up. But, yeah. Really interesting movie. It was really interesting. It was about steroids. And the thing that was kind of interesting.
Are you talking about Chris Bell?
Yes, wow.
Wait, okay, good.
See what Artie was talking about? You're the smartest guy on the planet. Yeah, it was a movie about, here's what I'm going to say. We as a society, we know about the effects of showing these unrealistic figures to young women. Where you show Barbie, and you know, once in a while you hear him talking about it. You know, she has no waist, she has, right. She's bosomy, she has no hips. You know, this is totally unrealistic. And you're giving women an eating disorder, essentially. Mm-hmm. Young girls are growing up watching.
Americans.
Yeah, Americans. You're growing up watching Baywatch. This is insane. No woman looks that good in a right. bikini. But think about it from a young male perspective. You're a 12, 13-year-old male.
Sure.
You've just had your bar mitzvah, you got your acoustic guitar, you're heading out to Flagstaff. And you're watching pro wrestling, right. And you're watching Hulk Hogan, or you're seeing the action figures.
Yeah.
Picture what these action figures look like, and then picture yourself at 13 in your underpants.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so Hulk Hogan
I'm doing that right now, by the way.
Hulk Hogan is saying, hey, little Hulkamites, eat your vegetables, eat your vitamins, do your push-ups. Meanwhile, he's juicing his ass off.
Yeah.
He's on 25 different kinds of bull nuts, and he's telling you, eat your vegetables and do your push-ups.
Yeah, well,
you're
a great
eating,
point.
You're
yeah.
eating your vegetables and doing your push-ups. You don't look like shit.
Yeah.
These guys are all juicing. Arnold Schwarzenegger's juicing. All the guys that are on the cover of the – when they do the fitness magazines and the guy's standing there and he's saying, I use this protein, he's on fucking yeah. juice. He's shooting himself up with steroids, and then you're buying the protein and wondering why you're not looking like
yeah,
that guy.
Yeah, the guys who are setting the home run records and, you know, obliterating records in every sport.
Right.
Know.
So this guy, Chris Bell.
Good man.
Good man. And I've met him a time or two, real smart guy. He went out and made this documentary, and he did it himself, and he was a power lifter, and his brother is a power lifter, and his brother won't get off the juice. And his brother, but the thing is, wow. is his brother was went from like bench pressing 500 pounds to bench pressing 650 when he's on the juice. And the problem with the juice is there's no real definitive information that says it's going to kill you. Like we say it is, and
is
we say
true?
It's cheating, but it's not really bad
is
for
that,
you.
Is that what the documentary purports to say? I mean,
part of it is because to say what hypocrites guys like Hulk Hogan are who tell you to eat your vegetables and you'll be a Hulkamaniac too when he's
right.
slamming.
But what about,
slamming
doesn't
juice.
It degrade the bone, the density or anything? No?
Well, one could argue, well, first off, as soon as you hit 29, you start dying.
Right.
I mean, slowly.
Sure.
But you start dying. I mean, that's what you start, your muscle mass goes down and your
right.
bone mass goes down and shit like that. And one argument is you can see a guy who's 71 and built like a 31-year-old college linebacker, and you go, okay, that guy's juicing. On the other hand, maybe it's bad for him. On the other hand, he's a 71-year-old dude
right.
who could lift a car off you if it fell off the jack and you're trapped under it. So how bad a shape is that 71-year-old guy really in?
Well, I think you've just made a good argument that we should keep old people on the juice, so in case you are changing your tire
and the jack,
and
goes,
the jack
out.
Goes out, there'll be a guy who can come over and lift it off of you.
Right, some guy. Well, I think old people should be on the juice and on energy drinks, and we should keep the young kids off the juice and give them Ensure. That would be my utopia. They would have a bunch of really strong, energetic old people and a bunch of mellow 15-year-olds instead of the opposite. Hearts of Darkness, obviously one of the great documentaries out there. We interviewed Francis Ford Coppola on this very program a couple weeks back and talked to him about the trials and tribulations of that. And I got to tell you, as good as Apocalypse Now was, the documentary in its own way maybe even more interesting because you got to really see what was at stake and what was going on.
It was crazy what they were doing.
He put his house up, and then the monsoon season would blow in.
And then in Vietnam, they wouldn't let him shoot there after they were supposed to do the big helicopter thing.
The helicopters.
Martin Sheen had a heart attack.
Yeah, went crazy.
Martin Sheen was great. It was funny because I was talking to Coppola about it. He's like, yeah, well, Sheen during that time was he was exercising a lot and smoking a lot. And he had a heart attack. And I thought, wow. There you go. All right. So I would say Bigger, Stronger, Faster, America, and Hearts of Darkness if you haven't
and
seen
that. Man on Wire is great, too. If you
haven't. I heard that's phenomenal.
It's great.
That's where really the guy good. Is going from World Trade Center to World Trade Center.
Yeah, the
Frenchman.
Tightrope guy.
Tightrope guy.
Great. It's great.
I heard it's great, and I have not seen that one yet.
It's good.
So there are three good ones for you, Sweetie Pea.
Well, thank you very much.
Good times. Yeah, my feeling is about documentaries, I mean, comedies are great, but, you know, all the, like, CSI Miamis and the cold cases and all that kind of stuff is like, or even House or whatever the hour-long drama is where they have to find out, you know, who shot the Pope at the end. As long as we have the actual documentaries out there.
I missed that episode of House.
Yeah.
The Pope got shot and came in.
Yeah. You didn't see that?
No.
Season one. You don't have it on box set?
I don't. I really have to get it.
Who shot the Pope? Yeah. The point is that's made up shit. There's real shit out there that's far more interesting.
I'm a documentary fanatic, and
now, if you want to see a comedy, see a comedy. But if you just want some drama, my God, see a doc.
Have you seen those shows on? I think it's on Discovery. The I Shouldn't Be Alive.
Mm-hmm.
Man, those are great.
Yeah, they just started running those. I can't get enough of that stuff. I just watched a thing on, I don't know, it was on Bio. It was just 5 or 8 comedians all gone before their time. You know, Richard Jenny and, you know, Richard Pryor. And I don't know if it's the third guy named Richard. But, you know, all the guys, just how they died, what their career, Sam Kinison, all that kind of shit. It was just, it's fascinating.
Have you seen The Staircase?
No.
Dude, tonight. Go get, if you have to buy it, go get The Staircase. It's the most amazing, engaging documentary I've ever seen.
Really?
It's two French guys made this, and this was recommended to me from someone, and I ended up watching.
Artie Lang's not going to like this. French guys make a documentary. This is just what he expected out of you.
It's amazing. It's there's this guy in Durham, North Carolina, who is suspected of murdering his second wife, and it's basically the trial leading up to it, 6 1-hour episodes, it's still inconclusive at the end, and people argue about whether he's guilty or innocent, and I've never had more, the stuff that is revealed that happens is so fantastic. You forget it's a documentary, you forget it's a real guy in front of this camera, his real family, and you'll never have more vacillation between, like, oh, he's totally guilty. Oh, wait. No, he's totally innocent.
Really?
Oh, wait. No, he is guilty. No way. Oh, he's innocent. And it just goes on and on and on. And I won't.
The Staircase.
The Staircase. It's amazing. Amazing.
All right. So we got The Staircase, Hearts of Darkness, Man on Wire, and Bigger, Stronger, Faster, America. David Cross, this has been one of the fastest hours I've ever spent in my life.
Oh, my pleasure, man. This is great.
Year One, by the way, is currently in theaters. And where do we send people on the web if they want to find you and catch up with all your projects?
Well, you can go to bobanddavid.com, the website I do with Bob Odenkirk. And I don't really have much of a presence. You know, I don't have a MySpace or a Facebook or a Twitter thing, but I've got that movie that's out now, and then I'm doing I did a show in England, which will air in December there. I don't know when it'll come out over here. Called The Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret. And then I've got a book coming out in the end of August. I'll be touring with that book, too.
Well, come back. And can you come back?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Absolutely. It was great.
Good time. So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for David Cross, my buddy the Wheeze, and my assistant Jay on Skype saying, mahalo. Rascal King.